Thank you. All right. Thank you for the green light, Howard. Good. Welcome, everyone. And thank you for joining us this evening. And thank you, Howard, for always giving me the privilege to be able to address the Wednesday night crowd.
Rabbi, if I can interrupt, the joke there is he only heard about it on Sunday night. So he hasn't had a lot of time to prepare this year. So,
Oh, that's a lot of time for Rabbi Kurtz.
I appreciate that. But I'm sure it's something that, God willing, we will enjoy. And for those who saw the title of our class is Agudath Marley, Can I Dedicate a Synagogue in the Name of My Deceased Dog? That is the question that we are dealing with this evening. And what I need a balance, I guess I'm going to try to do is we probably have two kinds of people that will be on this meeting with us. We have people who hear the question and they think it's an absurd question. And we have other people who potentially are with us that may be dog owners. And for some people, having a dog is not only a pet, but they have a strong emotional connection with their pet dog that it almost feels like a child to them. So this is the question requires a certain context. And I'll put my biases out there on the table. I'm not a dog owner. I just, I'm allergic, and that wasn't the culture I grew up in. And I don't want to have to clean up after it and additional responsibilities. But I could appreciate that people enjoy having the company of a pet dog. So what we're talking about here is animals in general, but as we'll see from some of the sources, there may be something uniquely positive and also uniquely negative in rabbinic literature about dogs. Just for those who are with us on Sunday mornings, this is a throwback to a while ago. Does anyone remember what we learned about back in Parshas Kitzetze about dogs? It was only one pasuk, so don't worry. I'm not going to hold you accountable if you forgot. So we learned on the Sunday morning Parsha class, the Chumash class, that there is something called an Esnan Zona, which is, let's say, a man solicits the services of a prostitute. And so he gives her in exchange a donkey. He gives her some sort of, well, not a donkey, I guess. It would have to be an animal that can be brought on the altar. So he gives her this animal as the harlot's wage. That animal cannot be brought upon the altar of God. And the idea behind it is pretty simple. The idea behind it is that something that was used to facilitate such a despicable deed, how could something like that be brought upon the altar of God? Or furthermore, a harlot might rationalize and say, well, I committed a sin, but at least I'm giving some of my wage. I'm giving Maaser to the Beis HaMikdash at a temple. So that will be indulgences. That will annul the sin that I just committed. So the Torah doesn't want anyone to think that they could get away with that so easily. Then the verse, oh, well, that was by way of introduction, but yes,
Yeah,
Toby.
I was going to say I definitely missed that class because I'd remember this. But I mean, doesn't that have implications for something like giving tzedakah from money that you earned by selling tryphus?
Well, you're allowed to sell a trefa. That's actually, oh, so that's the connection actually to the Parsha. So what I usually do when I'm asked to give a last minute class on Wednesday night is a halacha on the Parsha class. So the connection is, so where does trefas come up in this week's Parsha? It's not explicit. Anyone know? So the verse says, let me read
Something
it
to
out
do
to
with
you over here.
the sacrifice?
That wasn't what I was thinking of, but I hear that connection as well. It comes up as follows. If anyone has a Tanakh in front of them, it's Exodus 11:7. Uchol b'nei Yisrael lo yechratz kelev lishono. And when the b'nei Yisrael and the Jewish people were leaving Egypt, none of the dogs were yechratz kelev lishono. I guess one could translate that as barking. None of the dogs barked at them. And therefore, later on in chapter 22 of Exodus, it says, La kelev tashlichun oso, that when you have a trefa, when you have tref meat, instead of getting rid of it, throw it to the dogs, since the dogs didn't bark at the Jews on their way out of Egypt. We'll elaborate on that a little bit more later. But now, why did I bring up the Esnan Zona? Because the next pasuk right afterwards is called is Mechir Kelev. That if you sell a dog and you make money from that, you should not use those wages to then bring a sacrifice in the temple. Which, and the reason is because there seems to be a very negative portrayal of dogs in the Talmud. We'll look at these sources again as we progress through the shiur. So if you're just reading through the Torah casually or semi-casually, you'll get a sense that perhaps dogs, on the one hand, are praiseworthy. We give them the treif food because they did not bark at us when we left Egypt. But on the other hand, we have a verse that says that money made for selling a dog, since a dog, the Gemara tells us, has chutzpah, has a form of audacity, therefore you should not use that to bring a sacrifice on the altar in the temple. So there's going to be conflicting opinions, conflicting accounts and portrayals of a dog in rabbinic literature. But here are the questions that I want to address, and we'll do each one in order. Question number one, this is the first case. The first case is that Reuven, and these are cases supposedly that actually happened. Has anyone ever read any halakhic literature from Rav Zilberstein? So those who are with us.
He does stuff on Chabad, doesn't he?
Oh, no, he's not Chabad. He's a son-in-law of Rav Eliashiv. I mean, maybe Chabad takes the material from him, but I quoted it, I think, once during our first Gemara Shir on Thursday nights. I have a sefer. I'll show it to you, just if it helps at all. Usually I have my Sfarim collection back there. So it's called Chashukei Chemed. This is what I use for the Thursday night Shir. I use sometimes a supplement. He has interesting practical stories and questions on each page of Gemara. So, and also for, he has Vaharivna, which is when he asks practical halakhic questions and anecdotes on the Chumash. So that's his shtick. His shtick is he likes asking practical halakhic questions and bringing anecdotes, brings Chumash and brings Gemara and other texts to life in a very practical way. So the question he asked was, Reuven, this is a real thing. Reuven was in his house and a fire broke out in his house. But Reuven was asleep the entire time and he did not notice that there was a fire going on. And Reuven had nothing happen. He would have been consumed and he would have died in that fire. But his dog was barking so loud that it was able to wake up the neighbor. The neighbor came down to see what all the fuss was about. And he noticed that there was a fire, so he broke down the door. He saved Reuven, Shimon Kinyan, he saved Reuven from the fire. Now, many years later, Reuven passes away. And they're reviewing Reuven's will. And in Reuven's will, he specifies that he wants to split $20,000 between this man who saved his life and the dog who barked to save his life. And the question he asked is, so if $10,000 is supposed to go to this man who saved him and $10,000 to the dog who helped facilitate it, what's the halacha in that case? What do you do with that money? You know, a dog can't acquire anything. You can't give the dog $10,000 and the dog lifts it up and makes a kinyan on it. It doesn't work like that. He can't make an acquisition. So what do you do in a case like that? The other question that we're going to deal with is, the case was, and there's a little bit more of a story behind it. I'll just share it in brief. So this occurred in America. This other story occurred in Israel, that there was a rabbi who was a Kiev worker. He went to like the Tel Aviv area. You know, I guess that's always how it works. And what happened was an ambulance was driving down the road. It turns on its sirens. So immediately he pulls over to the side of the road to let the ambulance go by. But he inadvertently ran over somebody's dog who was on the sidewalk in the margins. And so when he got out of the car, he apologized profusely to the owners. He said, I'll give you whatever compensation you need. I feel so terrible. And what happened was they actually built a relationship. And these kind of secular Israelis, they said, you know what? Don't pay us a thing, but come give a shear in our house once a week to all the members of our community. which you got to take a second. And if this is true, you got to like appreciate that that's actually what they wanted. Because I mean, if, you know, just imagine if myself or Rabbi Cohen accidentally ran over someone's dog in a neighborhood, the last thing they want is for us to come into their house afterwards and give a shear or something. I can't imagine that happening. But that is the story. So the story goes on, and one day they were gaining traction. That first, you know, 5 friends came over, and then 10 friends came over. And at a certain point, this rabbi who was giving a shear at their house on a weekly basis, it became really popular, and they wanted to establish their home, or they wanted to make a building and establish a Beis Medrash because of all the people who got interested in learning Torah. So he writes over here, Hichlatnu kishema shah midrashah yeh zichron Igor. And we decided that the name of this Beis Medrash would be called Zichron Igor, meaning the memory of Igor. So the Talmud Chacham, this rabbi asked, Miza Igor, who's Igor? Talmud Chacham. Hashivu b'nei ha-mishpacha, the family members answered him, Igor, who's Zeshemi menu ha-kol yischil? That's how this all began, from Igor. Hakelav ahu shalanu, it's our beloved dog. Under rotsin la'an tziach es zichro ba'akamas beis ha-medrash al shemo. We want to ensure his legacy and perpetuate his memory by establishing a Beis Medrash, basically like a shul, in his memory, called Zichron Igor. So not Agudath Marley, that was my take, but it's called Zichron Igor. And so they asked the Talmud Chacham, this rabbi, is it permissible not to name the Beis Medrash after a dog? That they already decided on. Actually, what they asked was, are we allowed to say in the cornerstone where it's dedicated in Igor's memory, are we allowed to say that, you know, maybe Igor died during one of the Israeli wars from a terrorist or something? Or do we have to say that it was just like an accident on the side of the road? That was their question. But this rabbi, he was like so taken aback by the premise of the question that he had no idea what to say in the moment. So he consulted Rav Zilberstein and said, should I even be letting them go forward and naming this Beis Medrash in the name of their dog? Something didn't rub him right about that. Something definitely made him hesitate. So he sought counsel from Rav Zilberstein to ask him, is this something appropriate? Okay. Those are the two questions that we are dealing with. And they relate in the sense that it's talking about the significance of a pet, of a dog, but these are two fundamentally different questions. The first question is a monetary question, which I don't want to spend as much time on, so I'll give you the answer. I'll share the screen in a moment. So question number one, remember, was $20,000 in a will. $10,000 supposedly should go to the person who saved the deceased, and $10,000 to the dog who helped save the deceased. What do we do with that kind of money? Can anyone imagine? Does anyone think where we could find a precedent for that in the Talmud somewhere?
No, but I could think of what you could do for the dog as far as the money is concerned.
Phyllis, yeah?
Give him steak to eat every night.
Ah, okay, very good. So Zilberstein's going to suggest something, maybe not a steak meal every night, but something along those lines. Very good. Let me share my screen. Sometimes my tabs are still open to my email, so I actually need to. Good. Okay, I just switched that. And now I will screen share. So there actually is a Gemara that serves as precedent for this. And it's almost the identical case. The case of the Gemara is here on the screen in Bava Basra, on Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. Can everyone see it? Are we good? All right. The case is almost identical. So it says, so Knei At V'chamor, you and the donkey. So instead of a dog, it's a donkey. Will inherit, will acquire something from me. So what do we do in a case where someone wants to, in one fell swoop, bequeath part of their property to a human being and to a dog? So there's three opinions in the Gemara on this. Opinion number one, Rav Nachman Amar, Knei Mechsa. So the dog, just halachically, it can't acquire anything. Animals don't own things, period. So, but what about the human being? So let me just put Okay, I'm putting everyone on the bottom of the screen there so I can see Rashi on the side. So pity number one is he gets half, regardless of the dog, which makes sense. Knei mechsa. Tahachi amrle, atava chamor, teknu shneichem, hum mechsa, vata mechsa. You get half, he gets half. Vul avara ish chelko b'shil hachamor, shol tlan zebezeb. Just because the donkey can't acquire his $10,000 doesn't mean that the human being shouldn't acquire his $10,000. Even though he said it in one sentence, it's not that he made one acquisition contingent on the first acquisition. That's opinion number one. V'Rav Hamnuna Amar, lo Amar Klum. He hasn't said anything, meaning there's no acquisition that takes place. Rashi here says, why? The cave into the Kenyan Echad Shitiv Shnehem, lo Nigmar Abedaitu Lahaknos Lezeb, lo Zeklum. The cave into Achamor Lokana, Iunami Lokana. So since he phrased it as one bequeathal, if that's the right word, bequeathment?
Bequest.
Bequest? That's the word.
Bequest.
Okay, good. We got our professionals here to tell me what to say. So we got bequest. Since it's one bequest, there's got to be a better word than that.
No, that's it.
Okay, that is it. It's just funny to me. But that's because I just didn't know that. So there's one bequest going on here. So if you can't fulfill part of it, you can't fulfill any of it. So if we almost question, did he really mean to even bequeath anything to the human being, full well knowing that he can't give anything to the dog? This whole thing might just be a joke. And the last opinion, Rav Sheshes Amar Kanaakol, that the human being acquires everything. Because since the donkey can't acquire it, what he really meant was everything should go to the human being. Those are the three opinions in the Gemara. Now, if you just swap the word donkey with dog, that's exactly our case. This is a perfect precedent in the Gemara. And now, how do we pass again? There's three opinions. So if we look over here in the Shulchan Aruch, Amar Lei, Knei Nechsai O Chefetz Ploni, Ata Ubehema Zu. So I'm bequeathing you this piece of property from my estate, you and this animal. Atav v'ubar zeh kanahu mechsa. Zeh kanahu mechsa. So what happens over here is that if I try bequeathing to an animal or to an ubar, to a fetus, then the fetus is essentially the same issue. A fetus, it's not born yet. It can't make any acquisitions. It's arguably, that's the abortion class we had for a Monday night shiur. Arguably, it's not a human being yet. It definitely can't acquire anything. So the halacha is that the human being, the full normal adult human being, he gets the $10,000 irrespective of the dog. The other $10,000 just remain with the estate. That is what the Gemara and that's what the Shulchan Aruch say. Now, however, I wanted to bring in Phyllis's point. It sounds like this poor dog, you know, good, faithful dog, he's getting nothing out of it. But what he suggests is, like what Phyllis said, is that maybe there's a, remember we had this year, last time I covered this class, we talked about mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames, that there's an obligation or there's a mitzvah of some sort to fulfill a person's dying wishes. So perhaps, Rav Zilberstein suggests, there is some form of a, maybe not an obligation, but there's an imperative to fulfill his dying wishes. So what people do nowadays, he says, is that people like buying quality meals for their dogs. People like buying little sweaters to put on their dogs. People like pampering their pets. So perhaps what he meant was not that this, he knows the dog can't do anything with $10,000. The dog doesn't understand what money is. It doesn't know how to utilize it. It can't acquire it. What he meant was, maybe, that the $10,000 should be invested in, I don't know if that means a steak every night, but something along the lines of what Phyllis suggested. That's what Rav Zilberstein says. And he says, actually, there's a little bit of, it's a nice idea because it shows hakaras hatov. It shows gratitude because this person recognizes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that God sent this dog to help save him that night, by giving back to this dog, it shows hakaras hatov, and therefore, that's actually a very positive character trait. Now you might say, maybe Akarsa Tov showing gratitude only applies to fellow human beings. Well, who can find a proof from last week's parsha that is not the case? That Akarsa Tov could extend beyond human beings. Toby, you're muted. Toby, can you unmute?
Yeah. With Moses, with the river, not to strike the river because it had done him well, and not to strike the earth because it had hidden the Egyptian's body.
Precisely. Exactly what I had in mind. Yashar Koach. So what we're told is that Moshe Rabbeinu, he did not want to strike the river. He didn't want to strike the ground because this river, the river is an inanimate object. The river couldn't care less if someone gives gratitude to it or not. It doesn't have any intelligence, any thought at all. It's a river. It's inanimate. Yet Moshe Rabbeinu showed Hakaras HaTov. He showed gratitude to the river, saving him when he was a young baby being put in that basket in the river. So gratitude, if one can show gratitude to an inanimate object of a river, alachas kama v'kama, certainly to a dog, to an animate object, which has feelings and emotions as well, maybe not to the same extent as a human being, but certainly it does possess that. Okay, so that's number one. That was the answer to number one. Any thoughts on that before we get to the main course? Okay, let's return back to our question. Now, Zichron Igor, Agudath Marli, is that okay? So we're going to look at a few accounts of the opinion of dogs in rabbinic literature. I assume no one's watched. I just finished it today, so no one had a chance to watch my Dvar Torah for Shabbos. I double dipped a little bit. So if you heard it, then you might know a little bit of what I'm about to say, but I doubt anyone's seen the YouTube clip yet. So we should all be good. So we're told in the Gemara that there is a rabbi in the Gemara named Rabbi Yochanan ben Torta. Does anyone know what a torta is? It's not a tortoise, if that's what you were thinking.
It's not a tort, I guess.
It's not a tort either. Nope. Torta means cow in Aramaic. It's a word for a cow.
Para? So
that's a really odd name. Rabbi Yochanan ben Torta. Rabbi Yochanan, the son of a cow. And now you know what the title of my Dvar Torah was. You look at the video. Son of a cow. So why was he called a son of a cow? That sounds very pejorative. It sounds pretty insulting to call somebody a son of a cow. It sounds like something else that we may hear on TV sometimes. So why would the Gemara give him such an insulting name? So because many of the Rishonim, the Ritva and Tosos, they were bothered by this, they actually cite an obscure Medrash, which gives kind of a backstory to how he got this name. The story is that there was once this anonymous tzaddik, this anonymous pious Jew, that he was very careful and scrupulous about the laws of Shabbos. And what happened was that he actually had a cow. And the cow would work 6 days a week. But when Shabbos came, even the cow by its own volition would go back into the stable and would not do any form of labor on Shabbos. But what happened one day was this pious man was down on his luck. He was sitting in kola for too many years, and there wasn't enough cash income for him and his family. So unfortunately, times were tough, and he had to sell his cow in order so that he could continue learning in Kollel or whatever he was doing with his time. So he couldn't find a Jewish buyer, so he found a non-Jewish buyer who bought the cow. Now, everything seems fine and dandy. He's living his life happily. This non-Jew now has a new cow to work the fields. Sunday, the cow works the fields. Monday, the cow works the fields. And then finally, Friday, all of a sudden, those are with us before for Mishnah, Shkia hits, it's automatically Shabbos, the cow stops working, and this non-Jew, he's very disturbed. He's like, why is this cow like, he's trying to push the cow, work, you know, do whatever cows do. And then he figures, okay, maybe it's not feeling well, it's a fluke. Same thing happens next week. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it's working, Shkia stops. And then 1 week after the other week, after the other week, and this person, he's taking note, he's starting to realize there's a trend here. Every single Saturday, this cow refuses to work. So he goes back to the Jew, and he says to the Jew, you sold me a defective cow. It decides to take off one day a week. I never gave it a day off. So I demand the money back. Take your cab back. Give me my money back. This is a mekachtos. It was bought under false pretenses. So the Jew says, I see what happened over here. So he goes ahead to the cow. I mean, it's going to only happen in the Medrash, really. It's, you know, going to work probably in real life. But he goes over and says, "Oi, para, para, kisha yisa biyadi, ayisi shaymer, it's a Shabbos. Vashav garmu li avonosai mecharti oschol ish. I was down on my luck and I had to sell you, unfortunately. But please, now that you're in the possession of this non-Jew, respect the fact that he doesn't keep Shabbos because he's not Jewish. He's not allowed to keep Shabbos, actually. So please work on Shabbos now." And so the cow began to work again. And this non-Jew came to the pious Jew and he asks him, it almost sounds like one of these Hasidic tales, really, but I guess I had to get it from somewhere. It's a Medrash. So he says to him, "How did you get the cow to start working again? And, you know, why wasn't the cow working to begin with?" So he explains to him that I kept Shabbos, so my cow decided to keep Shabbos as well. And this non-Jewish person, when he heard the rationale of why the cow decided not to work every 7 days, he made a kalvachomer. Again, for those who are with us for the Gemara class, a 4-day ori, whatever that means. He made a kalvachomer. He said, this cow, which is not sentient, it doesn't have the intelligence of a human being, recognizes its creator. So I, who am created in the image of God as a human being, but nosamli dasa bina, God endowed me with intelligence. Lo ya royli lahagir spori. How can I not recognize Hashem the same way this cow was able to recognize that God created the world and rested on the seventh day? Miyan iskayer. Immediately he decided to convert. Bahayari shemayim. He became a God fearing man. And he, you know, moved to Bnei Brak, had lots of kids, and learned in Kola for the rest of his days.
And the cow was happy ever after.
But then Vinikra, and then his name was none other than, you guessed it, Rabbi Yochanan ben Torta. And that's why he had adopted the name Rabbi Yochanan, the son of a cow. Because had it not been for this cow, he would never have come under the wings of the Shekhinah, under the wings of the divine. So because of this one cow being able to bring him into, influence him and inspire him to bring him Tachas Kanfei HaShekhinah, Rav Zilberstein says, you know, if a rabbi could take the name of Ben Torta, son of a cow, to show appreciation for a cow, it's not the most far-fetched thing to say. Perhaps a Beis Medrash could be named after a pet dog, which served as a basis to bring people to learn Torah. It's very much analogous. This cow inadvertently brought somebody to learn Torah and to practice Jewish religion. This dog that died inadvertently was the catalyst for bringing people together to learn Torah. So if a rabbi could be called Ben Torta, the son of a cow, because of what that cow did for him, it's not so far-fetched to say that a Beis Medrash could be named Zichron Igor or Agudath Marley. All right, we'll put that on the agenda for next board meeting.
I just keep wondering why the Lubavitch haven't recruited cows.
Why Lubavitch haven't
recruited cows?
Recruited cows. Well, they do kier. They don't do proselytizing. So they only work with people who are already Jewish.
Already Jewish. That's true.
Yeah.
Did Rabbi Ben Torta become a shochet?
That's a good question. You know, maybe he had too much hakar satov to the cows. Wouldn't that be interesting if we could find out if he was vegetarian or not? I don't think that was a thing back then, but I know many people in this community who would be very happy to learn if that were true. Okay. Now, the thing is, let's see, how are we doing on time? 8:33. Okay, we got a little bit of time. We're good. So all this, while this is all true, and after saying all these wonderful things about dogs, it seems still that many people are very reticent and very hesitant about ascribing religious significance to dogs. In fact, the Chazan Ish from 20th century, one of the great Gedolei Hador, great rabbinic leaders, when there was a dog in the house, he would say, take the Chof Lamed Beis out of the house. You know, like he would spell it. He didn't want to even say the word Kelev. He didn't want to say
Aren't some of, in from communities, aren't they frowned upon?
Yeah. I mean, where I grew up, no one owned a dog. You know, it was like exciting experience when my grandmother's sister would come visit us, and like from Long Island, and she wasn't, you know, she wasn't Orthodox or anything. So she owned, you know, only non-Orthodox people own dogs in my mind growing up. So she brought over her pet dog, Niner, I remember, and we'd play with the dog. But otherwise, you know, our non-Jewish neighbors had dogs.
Now it's a big thing, the five towns. Lots of people are getting dogs.
Really?
My daughter, Pamela, who was always terrified of them, they got a dog. I think she thought it might keep me out of the house, but it hasn't worked.
They also frequently have dogs, attack dogs, on the yeshivas in Israel as protection. German shepherds.
There is a halachic question about bringing a kelev ra'ah to one's house.
Years ago, growing up, no one had dogs because we used to think of it that it's a treifa animal, and you don't keep treifa animals in the house.
My mother had a dog.
We don't own a bunny rabbit either.
Yeah, but you could have a goat, you know, if you wanted, or some chickens, or a cow.
I never knew that religious people had dogs until I moved to Stanford. And then my daughter said, why can't we have a dog? Rabbi, the rabbi has a dog. I said, no, the rabbi can't have a dog. And 50 plus years ago, I learned that religious people do have dogs.
Well, you also had to have food.
Don't forget, a lot of very firm people in, you know, those, you know, the communities have so many kids. Where would they put a dog? You know?
Right, I mean, that's what we talk about in our birth control.
You also had trafe. You had to use trafe for food. You know, you had trafe in your house.
You give the trafe to the dog.
You don't have to serve them trafe food.
My cousin's dog ate very well.
Well, anyway, that's what it was years ago.
But you have to remember, when you can't serve your dog, it's basar v'chalav. You can't, not a mixture of milk and meat together. Because
how about pizza? But if it's prepackaged?
Well, the issue is basar v'chalav, you know, this is the thing. What's worse, milk and meat together or pork chops? You would think.
The milk and meat together for sure. The dog is allowed to eat the pork chop.
Right. So the issue with the meat and milk is that there's not only prohibition to eat it, but you're not allowed to benefit from it either. So by you feeding it to your dog, you're benefiting because it saves you from having to pay for other kinds of food.
Oh, I read a funny thing on Twitter once, like the gal said, yes, I did have pork hot dogs in my basket and they were for the dog, you know?
And how about Pesach? And how about Pesach?
What about Pesach? Like,
well, it's
chumets. Most dog foods have chumets in it. Chumets. Certainly all the dry foods do. So you have to eat special dog food on Pesach or
Turbot steak.
They didn't have it years ago. They didn't have it, and they didn't have it years ago.
I wonder if you look in the Rabbi Blumenkrantz book. I wonder if it has a section.
There actually, I think, is now a company that actually
makes kosher for Passover dog food.
Yeah, of course.
Wow. Okay, this is great. Thank you all for educating me on the culture around dog ownership. I think I identify a lot with Gloria.
I won't be joining them.
I'm not seeing many dogs until I came to Stanford as well. when I was in Plainview, everyone had a dog as well. I had to take antihistamines every single shop. I think that's what it was. Antihistamines every single Shabbos when I was there, when we went out for meals. Otherwise, I would just be having allergic reactions the whole time. Yeah. I get up, like we go over to someone's meal Friday night, and I get up for the sermon Shabbos morning, and my whole voice would be scratchy. But we'll be fine. Don't worry. Okay. Now, the reason that the Chazon Ish and others take a negative approach towards dogs is because there are actually sources that have negative things to say about dogs. One of them is the Mechir Kelev that we talked about at the beginning of the class, about how it can't be brought. If you sell a dog, the money, the funds that were used to purchase the dog cannot be used to purchase sacrifice for the temple. And then also there is a medrash which says, Amarav Gimel Chatzufim Him. There are three categories of beings which have a lot of chutzpah. Number one, chatzuf bechaya. What kind of wild animal has chutzpah? A kelev, a dog. Ba'ov, when it comes to birds, tarnagel, chicken. And ba'umos, when it comes to nations, which nation is known to have a lot of chutzpah? Anyone want to guess?
Amalek.
Yeah, us.
Us, Amalek. Yes. The Jewish people have a lot of chutzpah. And that's actually what it says in the Medrash, which is funny because you would think it's a compliment. Either it's a compliment to the dog, that dogs also have chutzpah like we do, or it's an insult to the Bnei Yisrael that we have chutzpah like the dog. I always found, you know, this is my, I'll just editorialize for 1 second and get back to the sources. I always found it funny how, you know, we raise our kids wanting them to have lots of good midos and respect. And then I remember someone who's like, you know, it was like a very, I guess the best way I could describe her as idle and docile. Very calm and, you know, no conflicts or anything. But then she like saying, I just love how like these Israelis have a lot of chutzpah. And I'm like, but wait a minute, like when chutzpah is a good midah or a bad midah? So it's not a good midah when your kid is chutzpah dick in school, but you could admire it when other people are doing it in a nation further. That always confused me. You know, you got to decide, is it a good or not? Now, I think people mean different things when they say chutzpah, which is what this might be talking about. You know, there's chutzpah, which is like when we say you're being chutzpahdik, you're being disrespectful. And there's chutzpah, which is having the strength and perseverance to achieve a goal, which is difficult to achieve. So we have to define our terms. But anyway.
Can I ask you about a quote?
Yes.
I remember from years ago when I went to school in the city, I used to travel every day from the Bronx to Manhattan. We used to have a snack on the train, and the bunch of us who went home together, we spoke Hebrew to each other so that nobody would understand. And while we're eating our snack, some fellow comes over to us and says in Hebrew, "Ha'ochel bashuk domeh lekelev."
Someone who's found eating in the marketplace is likened to a dog. Right. It's a statement in the Talmud.
Very negative.
So because a dog eats while it's on the run, and the human beings, the way you're supposed to eat a meal is you sit down.
You're supposed to eat like a mensch.
You know, you don't like, you know, well, I guess like what Phyllis described, you know, you're catching the A train and you're taking a bite out of your laffa while you're grinding on. It's gluttonous. I don't know if gluttonous is the right word, but it doesn't look masuda.
The A train is probably a bagel with a schmear.
What?
Bagel with a schmear?
Taking the A train is probably not a laffa. It's probably a bagel and a schmear.
A bagel with a schmear. Mm-hmm. If you're at my end of the line, either the Washington Heights end or if you're at the Farak way end, but everything in between is not.
We didn't need that.
It's certainly not
going to
be a
laffa. Not a laffa. Okay. I just had a laffa before. That's why it's on my mind. Okay.
Where'd you get one?
Where did I get one? Someone like made for some people around, but they're not distributing at this point. But there were a few more sources that I wanted to share. One is found in the Gemara in Yerushalmi, Maseches Trumos. The story is actually, yes, in the Gemara in Yerushalmi on Ayin Aleph. So the Gemara goes as follows. The story was, there were these farmers, these shepherds, they milked a cow. And when they went on their way, they left the milk exposed, and a snake came in the interim and decided, oh, look, there's a whole bucket of milk here. Let me take some to drink. But meanwhile, the snake inserted some of its venom into the milk. And the shepherds did not take notice to this. The dog saw what happened and began to bark so loud. They thought that there was something wrong with the dog. Why does the dog keep barking? We got to silence it already. So what happened was the shepherds, they weren't heeding the dog. They thought the dog was just going crazy and barking. and they were about to drink from the milk. Meanwhile, this poor dog, it can't speak. It's trying to convey to the shepherds that this milk is poisonous, that they'll die if they drink it. Masa Kelef, what did the dog do once it saw that it was out of options? There was no recourse. Kofatz v'shasa ba'atzu min achalav. The dog drank the milk itself and knocked it over and drank some of the milk. Uka'avor mispar regoim mason. And after a few moments, the dog dropped dead. And what happened was these shepherds realized that the dog was trying to save their life, very much like the dog in the first story, the first scenario we talked about, who barked to wake up someone to save his master who was going to die in that house. And so what did these people do? Because they wanted to honor the memory of this dog that saved their life. They would have drank that poison. They would have died. The dog literally bit the bullet for the entire, for all the people who were there. So in Psikat Rav Kahana, it says, Sha'aroim asu acher kach matzev al kivro. They made a tombstone, a gravestone for this dog where they buried it. And they wrote on it, Nefesh HaKelev. And they said, this is a memorial for the dog. They literally made a grave to bury the dog there. And the Marsha says, the Marsha Sanhedrin says, Shekasav Kia Kelev, what does Kelev stand for? Nikra Kach Al Shem Shekulo Lev. Because a dog, a Kelev, is short for Kulo Lev. It's full of heart. And it's full of compassion and love. Vunem Aladunav. And is faithful to its masters. Wow. That is a huge contradistinction to everything, to the source that we just saw beforehand. That's much different than saying, take the Chaf Lamed Beis out of here, saying a dog has so much chutzpah. But rather, a dog is faithful maybe to other people. They can be nasty at times. But when it gets to know you, a dog is faithful to its master, and it's kulo lev. And we see here, we have bona fide precedent in rabbinic sources that, number one, you have a rabbi who took the name Ben Torta, son of a cow, to show gratitude for the cow that inspired him to become Jewish. And you find these Jewish shepherds who were saved by a dog. And they actually built a kever, they built a gravestone for this dog and buried him. Now, did they do like a whole kel mole and the entire funeral service? There isn't a section in the Madrich, in the RCA Madrich the rabbis used to perform life cycle events. They don't have any alterations for dogs in there. But presumably they did some kind of burial. Once,
Rabbi, they only have to stop once as they walk towards the kever, because one is like seven in dog years.
That's good. You know what? Purim is coming up really soon. We could write like
they do a pet cemeteries.
Well, right, there is our pet cemeteries, but there's definitely nothing in at least this is the closest I've heard in rabbinic literature.
The dogs have souls.
Do dogs have souls? Ah, so this is what we talked about in our Shara Gul class on Thursday morning.
Or cats.
All of that, Toby.
All of this is all well and good, and. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have anything against dogs, but would you attend a kollel that was named after a dog? I mean, when you're talking about an educational institution, you want it to inspire people, you know. I mean, seriously.
If the donor said, if you name it after my dog, I'll give you $5 million.
In a minute.
Would you attend the Kollel? This guy knows how things work.
But would people attend? I mean, you can have a beautiful building if it's empty. I don't know.
If you give them free food or something.
You know what you need to do? If it's in the name, if it's memory of a cat, you could say, like, people think it's the cat's family. So that way... You're good on all things.
In those days, they didn't have souls, do they?
Susan?
They don't have souls, do they?
So the belief, you know, based on our Thursday morning Shara Gmul class, we talk about the nature of the soul. So what we have seen is that there is a concept of afterlife for Jews and non-Jews, but for animals, at least, you know, I'm not an expert, but from what I've read, I didn't find any considerable schools of thought in Jewish theology that believe that there is eternal soul for animals. So that's actually
my cousin's niece just about collapsed when she heard about the Yahrzeit candle.
The Yahrzeit candle
for the cat.
Oh, you, is there like a crowd around your phone or computer over there? There's like more than just you right there.
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh no, I wouldn't let them hear this.
Oh. But coming back to Rabbi. It, I think.
Rabbi.
The way this can, yes, Phyllis.
I'm sorry. I wanted to get a word in. You know, today we have rescue dogs, bomb sniffing dogs, helper dogs. In the days when the Mishnah or the Talmud was talking about dogs, they didn't know about this. They didn't have this. You know, they didn't experience the way we look at dogs today as being very vital for many reasons.
Certain dogs.
No,
I said rescue dogs, bomb sniffing dogs, helper dogs. They provide a lot. Yes.
They at the time did have shepherding dogs that were key and vital in helping That's them with their flocks and would help provide protection and ward off people in the early
Maybe.
Morning. They were their security system. The dog would wake up, they'd hear intruders. So Maybe. I think they didn't use them the same way as we did, but certainly there were areas where dogs were well known to be very helpful to
Right, and that is the story of the dog drinking the poisoned milk to save its owners, to save the shepherds. So points well taken.
That's a rare case. Today we have lots of stories about dogs.
Yeah,
we've had seeing eye dogs for decades. Forget about the current trend the ones that are comfort dogs, but seeing eye dogs have been around for decades.
I don't know how. Yeah, well, yeah. Late, really. Not that long.
So this leads us to one final question, which is many people might adopt Toby's position that's all well and fine that we should show gratitude to a dog, we should treat them nicely, maybe we should buy them steaks every night if they save someone's life, but to go the next step and name a kollel, a beis medrash after someone's dog. Is that going perhaps a step too far? So maybe that's true. I definitely would hesitate before I renamed our shul to Agudath Marley. But maybe there's a more conservative question we could consider going back to life cycle events. The first Avelus question, the first morning question I ever received, I was on a Jewish pluralistic fellowship program. I interned one summer at the UJ Federation of New York. So I had like this whole cohort of other college students. So this young woman who was part of our cohort, she grew up Reform. And I remember she texted me one day and she says, are there any prayers that we should be saying? My dog is passing away. So actually what I advised her was, I didn't give her a kale mulle. I didn't give her a memorial prayer because that talks about eternal life. What I actually did was I advised her. I gave her a few Psalms of Tehillim, which talk about comforting oneself, being comforted by God. So I shifted the focus from the dog, from the pet, to the human being who was suffering because of the loss of their beloved pet. But just a fun fact, that was my first Avelis Shaila that someone ever asked me. But the last question that he deals with briefly is, when someone loses a dog, can they make a Baruch Dayan Emes? With the Baruch, not just like Baruch Dayan Emes, can they say God's name when they say Baruch Dayan Emes, like a close relative would say at a funeral as they tear Kriya, as they tear their garments?
They would probably say bark, Dayan Emes. Right. Was that a little rough on you?
It's, it's, Yeah, insert all the Bar Mitzvah jokes. There you go. I'll just be clear. I'm definitely not advocating Bar Mitzvahs or any of that sort. We
Rabbi, the same rule. They sit one day of Shiva because one is like seven. So
there you go. You got your whole whole.
We're writing the whole Talmud right here.
You're writing the whole Talmud. The last. So in this question, it really comes down to this. In the Bir Halacha, it actually says that in No Dalo Shehichmitz Yeno Mevarech Dynamis, if you are a wine dealer or you have a huge stash of wine and all of your wine goes bad and you suffer a huge monetary loss as a result, you can make a Baruch Dynamis. Baruch Dynamis is what someone says when they are facing a terrible thing befalls them in life. Now, usually something that, or not usually, but the most paradigmatic example of something terrible befalling someone in life is losing a loved one. There's nothing worse than that in life. But there are other things in life which may not reach the same threshold of a tragic event, but can still cause someone huge agmas nefesh, huge pain and anguish. So if someone loses their entire business, that is also a reasonable grounds to make a Baruch Dayan Emes with God's name. Mm. And so the question is, if someone can make a Baruch Dayan Emes, not just for when a human being dies, but even when they lose property, then perhaps it's also appropriate when someone loses a dog. So the distinction, though, he makes is, he says, it might not be appropriate because when you make a Baruch Dayan Emes, it's on the financial loss. But let's say someone has a guide dog, someone's blind, and they have a dog who helps guide them. Then when that dog dies, that is considered a very significant loss. They're not able to continue functioning properly until they get another one in life. So actually, he says, definitely in a case of a summa of a blind person, he can make a Baruch Dayan Emes. And it's possible if someone is in great anguish when their pet passes away, it would also be appropriate to say Baruch Dayan Emes, because it doesn't have much to do with the significance of the dog in Jewish tradition, but it's about me feeling anguish for losing something and declaring, I don't understand God's ways, but I accept his judgment and for bringing this challenge upon me in life. So it may be appropriate in that instance. So what we learned here actually, and you know, this is something that was interesting to me, because when people have come to me in the past saying, you know, what do I do when a pet passes away? What's appropriate from a Jewish standpoint? In addition to Psalms, it's possible they can make a Baruch Dayan Emes. And it definitely, we saw it's appropriate based on the Medrash that one could even erect a gravestone, a memorial stone for their dog, and write on there, you know, say Nefesh Kelev, and come visit it if it's something that gives them comfort. So, you know, I'm not sure if it's something that I'm going to go around advertising, but certainly if someone were to come over to me and say that's something we want to do, it's not something I would protest, because it's something that has that's founded in Jewish tradition. And again, it comes back to the idea of gratitude in this week's Parsha, that we show gratitude to the dogs that treated us properly as we left Egypt. And so by showing them gratitude, by showing them karsa tov, it helps us recognize the godly nature of a human being as well. Okay. Yasher Koach, everyone. Thank you all for joining. Thank you for the privilege once again. And well, God willing, it'll be in a while from now. We'll get a lot of volunteers in the meanwhile.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Good night. All right. Have a good night.